Hi, everybody. This is Francisco Gil-White for Management of Reality. We're doing our live today in English because we have a special guest from Israel, two special guests from Israel, Shai Kalach and Efrat. What's your last name, Efrat?
Last.
Oh, it is last. I thought, okay. And Efrat last from an organization that's called Netzach Israel. Am I right? Did I pronounce that right?
Perfect.
Right. Netzach Israel. And I think this will be very interesting for everybody. We're going to put Spanish subtitles later for our Spanish-speaking audience. So first of all, Shai and Efrat, please tell us, what does Netzach Israel mean and what is it for?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I cannot see the audience, so if there is any possibility to see them, though...
There is no possibility.
Okay. So Netzach Israel, basically, it's an organization which is supposed to, you know, there is a struggle in the world. You know, you can see that in the United States, there is a struggle against the deep state. In Israel, the deep state, it's much more severe than the United States. And why is that? Because the deep state originally is trying to...
Tell us first what you mean by deep state so that everybody's on the same page with you.
The deep state, it means that there are groups of power which, you know, unelected officials who control, you know, sub-control of the state. They conduct the state. They manage the state. Those unelected officials.
So bureaucrats, career bureaucrats or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. And much more than that, in origin, you know, the deep state is combined from, I would say, you know, an up international institutions like the International Court in Hague, for example. They would like, their goal at the end is to dismantle the nationalism among the world, in all the countries. So in Israel, it gets much more severe performance because Israel, you know, it's a state, it's the Jewish state. It's not just the state of the Jews. We came to Israel. We returned to Zion after 2,000 years of diaspora, not in order just to establish a sovereign state. It's a very good cause, but it cannot last for eternity. So you asked about the Netzach Israel, the eternity of Israel. We have a goal. We have a mission. We need to fulfill our destiny as Jews in the world. So the deep state here in Israel, their goal is to dismantle the Jewish state and to eradicate the Jewish identity from the Jewish state. And that's okay. The reason we have established the organization.
So in other words, so let me see if I'm going to paraphrase, tell me if I'm getting it right. So Netzach Israel, what does it mean, by the way, Netzach Israel?
The eternity of Israel.
The eternity of Israel. So
it's a verse.
I'm sorry?
It's a verse.
It's a verse.
On Samuel A. Yeah.
Can you translate?
The eternity of Israel won't lie at the end.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, Netzach Israel is trying to recover the Israeli state for Israeli citizens. It's trying to wrest the Israeli state from the deep state and give it back to Israelis. Would that be a good paraphrase?
Exactly. I can actually nominate you as the head of the organization.
Because I understand it so well. So
yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about your model of how Israel works. So why are these people who you identify as the deep state, why are they so powerful? Why can they do things that the Israeli electorate might not want?
Okay, it's a very good question. But I would like to say, just to emphasize, as to your question, that, you know, our slogan is to we return the power to the people, the sovereignty to the people, because it actually took out from the people. The sovereign has to behave as a sovereign. And once we cannot actually elect our leaders, you know, on one hand, we do elect in the elections. On the other end, we get unelected officials who manage our lives. So in simple words, as to a question, I grew up in the kibbutz. I was born there. I'm ninth generation from Israel. My forefathers came from Galicia, which is on the eastern side of Europe, Poland, yeah. And on 1803, 220 years ago. And I grew up in the kibbutz. My father and mother came from Tzfat, which is the capital of the Galilee. And I grew up as a secular boy. And I felt all the time that my Jewish identity was taken from me, not in purpose, but it was part of the new education, the recreation of a new Jew in Israel, you know, who can serve in the army, etc. And I had the privilege to serve as a combat pilot, as a fighter pilot on an F-16. And, you know, all the time I was asking, was searching my identity. At the beginning, at the establishment, at the dawn of the establishment of the State of Israel, the main institutions, specifically the army, was established by those leftists, which today became radical progressive leftists, again, who would like to eradicate the Jewish identity from the Jewish state. But at the beginning, the first organization who actually hold the rifle after 2,000 years of diaspora was Irgun Bar Giora. 2 years next was Irgun Ashomer, a Shomer organization, which was the base of Tzva Hagana Israel, the Israel Defense Forces. And they actually took control on the main institutions of Israel. And there is kind of mindset of supremacy, kind of dominance of those groups of power since the beginning, since the dawn of the establishment of the State of Israel.
Okay, so let me paraphrase to see if I'm understanding. Yes, so your historical model of Israel says the institutions of the Israeli state, when Israel first gained independence, were established by power groups that were on the left, on the left side of the political spectrum.
Exactly.
My own reading of Israeli history is that these people were primarily Marxists, right?
Exactly. But
these are the people who established the kibbutzim as farming collectives, where even the nuclear family was challenged and sort of dissolved in favor of this collectivist dream that these Marxists had. And these people created the main institutions of the Israeli state, which continue to be very powerful in Israel. And their ideology, because they were Marxists, was to remove religion, because Marxists are the enemies of all religion. And it just so happens that Jewish culture is basically religious culture, that all of the culture of the Jews is religious culture. So if you take out the religion, you're taking out the identity, because it's the identity is based on the culture that comes from the religion.
Again, you described it perfectly, and I insist that you should be the head of Netzach Israel.
I accept. Okay, so
thank you.
Let me ask you. Let me ask you a pointed question so that we can follow
up. But I would like to. Sorry for disturbing. Would you let me?
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you. First, we need to understand those struggles upon the hegemony in Israel before the establishment, prior to the establishment of the State of Israel, led to the Saison period, which... le Saison.
Saison.
As well in...
I speak French.
Yeah. the season. The season actually made the Agana troopers enlist to the Hasgir.
They were persecuting the Irgun
Tzvai. Yeah, they were persecuting the Etzel and the Lehi, exactly. And they were executed by the English army here in Israel. And then the
murder. Let me just interject. I'm sorry, Shai.
Yes.
My public doesn't know all of this history. So I just want to give them a little background so they know what you're talking about. So before the State of Israel was established, there was something called the Jewish Agency, which was the sort of Jewish government in Mandate Palestine. But more than a Jewish government, it was more like the servants of the British, right? It was the people that the British allowed to become the government over the Jews in British Mandate Palestine. And because they were servants of the British, they had to do whatever the British wanted. They had to follow British policy. And British policy was obviously to persecute the Irgun Tzvai Leumi, or Etzel, which was a clandestine Jewish army that was created to defend Jews in Mandate Palestine from Arab terrorist attacks, and also to expel the British from the land of Israel. Am I correct in all of this?
Again, perfectly.
Okay, so just to finish, just to finish, because my people need the context. Le saison that you refer to means open season. It was the Haganah, which was the self-defense force created by Jabotinsky, but then it was taken over by the leftists and became part of the Jewish Agency. They were ordered by the British and by the leaders of the Jewish Agency to go persecute the clandestine army that the revisionist Zionists, that were followers of Jabotinsky, had created. It was led by Menachem Begin. And so
the
saison meant open season on Lehi and Irgun. And it meant that the Haganah would try to find the people who were in the Irgun in their hiding places, try to find their gun factories, try to arrest them. And if they resisted, they would kill them.
Yeah, exactly.
So this was Jewish Jew on Jew violence, correct?
Jew against Jews,
I can actually tell you that my grandfather was arrested during the saison. He was an Etzel activist, and he was held in prison in the Tower of David in the Kishli.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this context is very interesting.
This is real.
This is very important context for our viewers, because most of them, most people think about the Jewish people through a racist lens, even when they're pro-Jewish. So people imagine the Jewish people as a homogenous, fully solidary, organic mass of people who always agree and always support each other and go together in every direction and so forth. But what you're telling us, what we're telling them, is that in fact there were very strong divisions within the Jewish people, so strong that in fact the people running the Jewish Agency were persecuting the revisionist Zionists who had created a clandestine army to defend the Jews from terror attacks.
Yes. Yeah. In simple words, le saison, I would translate it to English, the time of hunting. Jews were hunted by other Jews. But as to your question, it's much more than remove the religion. We need to understand that the establishment of those organizations, specifically at the dawn of the establishment of the State of Israel, they were established by the Olim, those who made Aliyah from Eastern Europe. They were persecuted by the pogroms in Eastern Europe called Sufot Benegev, hurricanes upon the desert. And the most famous is the Kishinev pogrom. And they decided that the main reason for those pogroms was the our being Amzgula. Amzgula, which means the Am of Hashem, to be elected by Hashem to lead this world, to goodness. And they believed that the only way to prevent those pogroms again is to eradicate this perception, this very perception of being Am Sgula. And therefore, they declared to be a Am Kechol Amim, a nation among all the nations. So they canceled our being as Jews. And they really, you know, Herzl stipulated an expression called Miklat Batuach, to be a safe haven. So those two perceptions of being a safe haven and to eradicate, you mentioned the word remove. It's not just to remove. There is a very famous story of Ben-Gurion who took Einstein to the Western Wall, and he asked him, can you see this Haredi Jew who prayed there? Told him, of course. So it's about to be the last Haredi Jew. I mean, not specifically, but he told him that we are recreating a new Jew here in Israel, a one who can hold a rifle, who can fight in the army without any connection to the tradition and to the heritage. But at the end,
a new Jew who is no longer a Jew.
Who is a Jew with a perception of being part of the culture, the Jewish culture, the Jewish, the Yiddishkeit, but not, you know, to live Judaism.
So if I understand you, but if I understand you correctly, Shai, the Marxists who were trying to, or who claimed to be solving the problem of anti-Jewish violence, their theory of anti-Semitism was that the practice of Judaism produced anti-Semitism. That was their theory, right? So they thought, well, the way to eradicate anti-Semitism is just to get rid of Judaism. Is that the theory?
Exactly. And again, you know what I think of your thoughts.
All right. Well, listen, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll direct the organization. So once they established the institutions of the Jewish state, Moshe Feiglin would say, they tried to create an Israeli state, not a Jewish state. In other words, they wanted the state of Israel not to be Jewish, and the Jews not to practice Judaism, because in their minds, this would make them, like you said, a nation among the nations.
I think it's very complicated. I think we need to differentiate between state of the Jews, you know, to be like a place, a very safe haven, a place for the Jews, and to be a Jewish state. It's easier to understand.
So a safe haven is just a place where people who call themselves Jews can live.
In other words, to not be annihilated in Auschwitz.
Yeah. But it doesn't need to have the characteristics of Jewish culture.
Exactly.
Okay.
I see. Not just Jewish culture, but, you know, again, to fulfill our destiny. I mean,
right. In other words, the Marxists wanted to abandon the historical mission of the Jewish people.
Exactly.
And what are you guys trying to do? Tell us, what is the mission of Netzach Israel? To restore the historical mission of the Jewish people?
Yeah, I mean, we need to transform the consciousness, the mindset of the society to understand that. And, you know, it's not just theory. I can give you ramifications for our days. For example, 2 weeks ago, a holy woman who were on a way to get birth in the hospital, she was murdered by those perpetrators, those murderers in Judea and Samaria. And all the political leadership and the military leadership, they condemn this horrific terror attack, of course, but they declare that we are going to catch those perpetrators, and not understanding that there is an enemy who is very willing to get rid of you and to annihilate the Jews here in their homeland. That's a very, very known implication, consequences of misunderstanding the main perception. Another example. Do you know that the former chief of staff, Herzi Halevi, you know, once he was a general before he nominated to be the chief of staff, and he canceled the orders to conquer Gaza Strip. Do you know why?
Why? Tell us.
Because he truly believed that the Gaza Strip is not part of Eretz Israel. We have the best intelligence in the world. Do you know that?
Yes.
Do you know that the American intelligence is based on the Israeli intelligence? So we can tell the aircraft from which angle to, you know, attack and release the bombs to kill Nasrallah, for example. But the same intelligence cannot foresee the massacre, cannot foresee the Yom Kippur War, cannot foresee the crash of the Assad regime. How could it be? Same intelligence. Because they do not believe of what I'm saying at the moment. They do not understand the connection between the, you know, our mission, our goal in the world. So they do believe that once there is a safe haven, we fulfill our mission.
I see. So let me ask you this. Is your model then of Israel that no matter who is elected, these Marxist, what would you call them? Would it be wrong to call them traitors?
I don't like the word bogdim in Hebrew.
Why
traitors?
Not?
Because, you know, there are those very, very left radicals like Ehud Barak, which who do believe that he needs to be out of Israel. But, you know, the majority...
Sounds like you think he's a traitor.
Yeah, he specifically, yes, of course. But the majority of the leftists are very confused. You know, I read a book...
No, but I don't mean the leftists in the population. I mean the Marxist bureaucrats, the people running the deep state. Would it be wrong to call them traitors? The small group of people who call the shots?
Yeah, of course.
Would you call them traitors?
Their leaders, those leaders of the, you know, the struggle, actually the coup against the government and against the army, of course.
Okay.
No doubt.
We have been hearing lately there was a controversy in Israel that has been baptized Qatar Gate, where it was found that Qatar was... putting money in the pockets of some of the people working in the Netanyahu government. And then it came out also that that the people running the intelligence services had been, you know...
Plus, in order to make Netanyahu regime fall. Just plots.
Excuse me?
Just plots, you know, fake news in order to make Netanyahu regime fall.
Oh, so you don't think it's true that Qatar has been corrupting people in the Israeli government?
No.
Oh, but wouldn't it be consistent then? I mean, if these people are interested, if they're traitors and they're interested in defeating any kind of Jewish state, why wouldn't it make sense that they're collaborating with the enemies of Israel?
Sorry, I thought you mentioned those advisors of Netanyahu of being connected and collaborating with Qatar.
So that was the accusation. The accusation was that Qatar was putting money in the pockets of some people working in the Netanyahu government. And then once that scandal broke, there were revelations concerning the people running the intelligence services who had been watching
Again, look, I do not know the facts, but I do know that there is a coup under Netanyahu administration, all his judgment, you know, איך הוא judgment? איפה את כן, המשפט?
It's trial.
It's trial. It's trial. It's, you know, it's all fake news, and we do not believe it. So I do believe that the Qatar gate, it's part of it.
So in other words, you would call yourself a Netanyahu supporter. You believe he is a patriot.
I do believe he's a patriot. I think he's a great leader. He's the leader of Israel. He's the elected leader of Israel. He was elected by more than 2 million voters. And, you know, he's not an angel. But I do support him. And I think that we need to support our leader in Israel and to help him.
Okay, so I'd like to know why you are so sure that Netanyahu does not work with the deep state. Let me explain why I'm asking this. My historical review of Netanyahu's performance as a politician in Israel has convinced me that Netanyahu is not really that different from leftist politicians in Israel, because even though when he campaigns for office, he is always very combative and promises that he's going to roll back the Oslo process and that he's going to defeat the terrorists and so on and so forth, once he is elected, immediately he switches narrative and begins pushing the Oslo process as fast or faster than leftist politicians. I've been very carefully looking at his performance, and this seems to happen every time he gets elected. And the other thing that worries me about him is that, and this, most people don't know this, they seem to have forgotten this, it was Netanyahu that violated the sacred taboo of Israeli politics back in 1991 in the Madrid Peace Conference, because he was the first one to open negotiations with PLO Fatah, which was absolutely taboo before he did this. And from those negotiations in the Madrid Peace Conference grew the Oslo Accord negotiations that were signed just 2 years later in 1993. So why shouldn't we put on the table the hypothesis that Netanyahu might be a wolf of the deep state in sheep's clothing?
Yep. So sorry for... your question proves that you don't understand what deep state is.
Okay. Enlighten and me.
The deep state is very cunning. And we need to know one fact, that the leadership is a reflection of the people. The leaders are not made of iron. They are not angels. They are human beings. Okay, and the very cunning deep state actually succeeded to make Netanyahu unaware to the deep state as well.
Yeah, to make Netanyahu what, sorry?
Unaware to the deep state.
Oh, so Netanyahu doesn't know what you know. Is that what you're saying?
No, now he knows, but he didn't know it for decades, since the very beginning of his... of his being as prime minister since 1996. Yeah, mm-hmm. Was the first, his first currency. So now...
What would explain, under that model, what would explain his performance in 1991? In 1991, he was the Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs. He went to the Madrid Peace Conference with then Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir because Shamir was not friends with David Levy, who was the foreign minister, and Levy didn't speak English. So he took Netanyahu with him to the Madrid Peace Conference, and Netanyahu was the first to open negotiations with PLO Fatah, and those negotiations became the Oslo Accords, which were an attack on Israel. So if he was a patriot, why did he do that?
Yeah, again, Netanyahu is not perfect. And the fact that he didn't cancel officially the Oslo Accords, but he did cancel them. He did cancel it. also through the...
to my knowledge, PLO Fatah is still in Judea and Samaria.
Yeah, you're right. Of course that the... you're right that, again, the official cancellation of the Oslo Accords is to ban the PLO out of Israel.
Yes.
That's right.
But they need to go.
Yeah, of course. You're absolutely right. But again, the leader is the reflection of the people. And Rabin government actually succeeded to lead the people to the Oslo Accords. This is first. But secondly, I wanted to say, just a minute.
Well, let me stop you for a second, because you say yeah. that the leadership is
important thing.
The leadership yeah. is a reflection of the people. But
yeah.
my historical recollection is that Rabin promised that he would never negotiate with PLO Fatah. And then when he got elected, he yeah. negotiated the Oslo Accords with PLO Fatah. So people, in fact, voted yeah. for no negotiation.
Yeah. yeah. Then when I he wanted got to elected, say, so I want to say, to emphasize, that even though Netanyahu is not perfect, he was elected by the people. So, you know, politics, it's a question of real politics. We need to, you know, there is the ideal and there is the reality. And we need, you know, always to conduct the perception of being an Am Levadad Ishkon u'Bagoyim Lo Yitchashav, to be a holy nation without take care of any other nations. And between keeping the IR, the international relationship among the nations of the world, especially with the United States. So Netanyahu, even though he's not perfect, he is the elected leader of Israel. So we have no alternative now. Maybe in the next elections, other leaders will take advantage. But we are not there yet.
Okay, and but independent of whether, of course, I agree that Netanyahu is not perfect. Nobody is.
Yeah.
So that's not really a point of argument. What I'm interested yeah. in is the following structure. If Netanyahu, when he runs as a candidate, promises that he's going to stop the Oslo process, because that's what he's done in every election, he promises yeah. that he's going to stop the Oslo process, that he's going to roll back the terrorists, and make no further concessions, and so on and so forth. When people elect him, they're electing him because of those promises. But what I see in his track record is that the minute that he is inaugurated as prime minister, he behaves in a manner opposite to the promises that he made in the campaign. Or would you disagree?
So in other words, you're saying that the people are stupid.
No, so I'm saying that...
Why do they re-elect him again?
Well, I think they re-elect him again for a number of reasons. One of them, I think Netanyahu is a tremendous speaker. I think he's a great actor. I don't think Hollywood has ever seen a greater actor than Benjamin Netanyahu. That's
in
one
other
reason.
Words, in other words, the public...
Wait, let me just lay it out for you. So one, he's a great actor. Okay. Two, the media is always protecting the Oslo process in Israel. So Netanyahu, first, he looks like he's going to fight the Oslo process. People vote for him. But then the media creates a managed reality that allows Netanyahu then to violate his campaign promises. So this is why I say that we should at least put on the table the hypothesis that Netanyahu is part and parcel of the deep state that has been destroying.
So Israel. In other words, he's a great actor, and he, you know, there is... a media that can, you know, add
protect
his act, yeah, protect him. So, in other words, the people is stupid. The public is stupid.
Well, I don't think we need to put an insult.
No, I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say no. I'm trying to say, in other words, look at the reality. Thanks God, we are in the age of expel to emigrate the inhabitants of the Gaza Strip. And it's going to be a takdim. How would you say takdim?
A precedent.
It's going to be a precedent to the inhabitants of Judea and Samaria. in my opinion. So this is, in one word, process. I do believe in processes, especially in democracy. And you are right. I have complaints about Netanyahu as well. But basically, I do support him. And I do believe that he is the elected leader, and not just because of his actual ability.
So, but are you saying, Shai, that we shouldn't even consider the hypothesis that maybe Netanyahu also works for the deep state? Because, I mean, look, one of the things that a deep state can do, and this is exactly what my research is about.
Do you think it's a pleasure to be in trail three times a week?
Sorry?
Do you think it's a pleasure to be in trail 2 to 3 times a week?
To be where?
In trail.
In
the court of Israel.
I see what you're saying. Well, look, I think that the thing we study, the reason we are called management of reality, is that we study how false realities are created for citizens via the media and academic systems. So no, I don't think the Israelis are stupid. I think Israelis, like people in the United States, like people in Mexico, like people in Europe, everywhere, we are trapped in a managed reality. Because you see, the minute that Western citizens allowed their governments to create clandestine services that can spend our money in secret, we gave them the opportunity to corrupt the entire democratic system of institutions. So if you have a secret service that is spending your money in secret, you know who they can pay? They can pay Netanyahu, just like they pay anybody else. And you know who they...
I'd like to... Sorry, can I just say something about that? I think that hypothesis might have been on the table until October 7th. Because ever since October 7th, I think we've been seeing something completely different. I think because the public mindset is starting to change... And moving, October 7th woke up everyone.
So, are you saying that since October 7th, in your view, Netanyahu has behaved like a real Jewish patriot?
Absolutely.
Why hasn't he conquered Lebanon? Why didn't he conquer Syria? Why didn't he attack Iran's oil infrastructure or its nuclear infrastructure when he had the chance? Why is he allowing Egyptian military exercises and the establishment of Egyptian military hardware in the Sinai, which is a preparation for an invasion of Israel? Why is he doing all that? Why has he fought the war in Gaza in a manner designed to kill Israeli soldiers instead of expelling Hamas from Gaza? All of these questions have been asked by many people. We see very little evidence that Netanyahu behaves like a Jewish patriot. He looks more like a servant of the United States, which has been doing everything it can to protect Hezbollah, to protect Hamas, to protect Qatar, to protect Iran, to protect Saudi Arabia, all of the enemies of Israel.
Okay, so there are questions, all, you know, good questions, maybe. But we need to understand that, first and foremost, we are not allowed to disdain our leaders. It's written in Sefer Hasidim, and it's written in Chazal, first and foremost. Secondly, you know, you are describing the reality.
Sorry, could you repeat that? What is it?
Yeah. Sefer Hasidim, L'Rabbi Yehuda Hasid, was written by Rabbi Yehuda Hasid. It's written there. Once you disdain.
What does it say?
Once you disdain your leader. Once you disdain your leader, you will get a horrible leader. So do not disdain the leaders.
Well, but
Israel.
I could quote the prophet Samuel to you, who told the Israelites when they asked for a king, he said, that's the worst thing you could ask for. The king is going to oppress you, which is a message consistent with the first commandment, which is the commandment against idolatry. And not questioning your leaders could be considered an
I didn't say not questioning. I said not disdaining.
Well, I don't say disdain. I say put on the table the hypothesis.
I didn't say you disdain. I didn't say you disdain the leader. I'm just saying that they're a good question and you need to questioning the leader. But you are describing the reality like there is, you know, the public need to sober up from all the tricks of Netanyahu. And it's not just that. Again, the Jewish people is Rak Am Chacham VeNavon Am Hazeh, is a very wise people. Under the media, Shtifat Moach, how do you say?
Brainwashing.
Under the brainwashing of the media, didn't convince that, you know, to their brainwashing, and they reelected again and again for the Likud party. So, Bezat Hashem, on the next elections, we're going to have a very, very interesting elections, and we shall see about Netanyahu.
When are those going to be, Shai?
In 8 to 10 months from now, we're going to be in the campaign, the elections campaign. Yeah.
Okay. And who's your favorite in those elections? Who do you think?
I was called by the public to establish a party, but I didn't establish it yet. You know.
So, but you don't have a favorite candidate, or is it Netanyahu?
To be a prime minister or for a party?
For prime minister.
If Netanyahu is running for being prime minister, of course he's my favorite. But, okay. You know, we are supposed to be, you know, our Netzach Israel movement has to be the home-based movement of our political arm, Bezat Hashem. So we are about to establish Bezat Hashem at the end, a political party, I do believe.
Oh, so you're going to establish a political party. Netzach Israel is going to become a political party.
Bezat Hashem, again, I didn't know on which constellation, you know, it can be.
I see. I wanted to ask you both. So is your reading of what happened in Israel that the people in control of Israeli institutions, what you're calling the deep state, is it your reading that they designed the educational curriculum to make Israelis into anti-Zionists?
Exactly.
You know, yes? Minister Kish, the Minister of Education, released a press release today about some of the changes he wants to make in the educational system. And I'm a religious person. My children go to religious schools. So, you know, we know that they have Bible studies and they you know, they're raised on Torah and Jewish values. And I was very shocked, even though I'm quite aware of what's going on in the school systems, I was still very shocked to see that one of the things that the minister added into the educational reform is at least 1 hour a week of Bible study. Which means there wasn't even 1 hour a week of Bible study in the regular school system in Israel. And I find that shocking and very, very sad, because how are we meant to raise our next generation with a connection to Jewish values? And like you said, I think that is a part of what they were trying to do in order to eradicate Judaism from the Jewish state.
I also heard, I don't know whether this is true, but I remember hearing someone accusing that the Nakba narrative was being taught in the Israeli school system. Is that true?
Of course.
What?
You know, you need to be...
That's unbelievable.
You need to stay a human being.
I need to stay a human being.
All part of the safe shelter mentality. If we came here to be safe, just to be safe, just to have somewhere safe, then it's not our right to be here. We came here because we wanted to be safe. So why did we, you know, there were people here before. So why did we kick them out, or why did we displace them?
But didn't.
When we came back to Israel to establish the state. If our only goal is to save,
you know,
if our only goal was to save, sorry, go ahead, Shai.
No, no, go ahead, please.
I'm saying if our only goal was to be here and be safe, then from now on, we need to make excuses for why we're here, because we don't really believe it. And it without our connection to Torah and to Judaism and to our values and to our heritage and to understanding that our story is not 77 years old. It's over 3,000 years old.
In other words,
then we have to keep making excuses for why we're here.
But this would mean that the leftists in control of the deep state have been teaching Israelis in state schools that the creation of Israel was a crime. Is that what they're teaching them?
Exactly. And I would say why. Once you know, Efrat tried to describe that there is a justification process. Once you believe that your roots has begun since the establishment of Zionism in 1897, so you need to defend, to protect the enemy here in Israel. So you need to build a new narrative that there is, on one hand, the Independence Day, the Day of Independence, and on the other end, you have the Nakba. And in this tragedy, you have to maintain to keep yourself as a human being and not just, expel Arabs from their state, of course. That's it. And that's the reason. But by the way, I think this is the most severe implication of this very wrong perception of just being a safe haven here in Israel. You always justify your existence. And once you justify your existence, you need to develop other directions to defend your enemies. As simple as that.
I see. If I can share my screen for just a second, I'd like to make you aware. I'd like to make you aware of
question, Francisco. How many time do we have? Because we have a message.
No, we're finishing up. This is why. So
the denomination of the head of the Shabak.
Yes, we're finishing up. I just want to make you aware of what we're publishing, because we're publishing here, over here, a series of articles on the war of 1948, where we show that there was no Nakba. So if you're interested in that, that may be useful to your membership. It's careful historical work, and it demolishes the Arab narrative. So you may want to take a look at that, and perhaps it'll be useful in your efforts. And I'm happy to send you a lot more material that we have on management of reality, defending the Israeli narrative and the Jewish people. So thank you very much for joining us, Shai and Efrat. This has been a very interesting conversation. I learned a lot. I hope that we can repeat this and you can continue to enlighten me and my audience on how the deep state works in Israel and what they have been doing to undermine Jewish pride and Jewish identity in the land of Israel.
I feel like we barely scratched the surface here. I really do.
I want to do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to thank you for having us, but more than that, for challenging us.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, there will be more challenges next time because that's my specialty.
Looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you so
very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.